From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mary Engish, filling in for Mitch Wortley. It's Tuesday, April 2nd, and here are today's headlines. The U.S. Postal Service yesterday confirmed that it plans to reopen a full-service facility in downtown Montpelier in the next few months. Montpelier lost its post office when the historic July floods caused enormous structural damage to the city's federal building. Since then, local officials, Governor Phil Scott, and Vermont's congressional delegation have grown increasingly frustrated by USPS's failing to restore services to the city. Postal spokesperson Steve Doherty says the process was delayed in part because it was difficult to find a suitable building in downtown Montpelier.
For the type of facility that we need, there are specific needs, like, for instance, you know, a loading dock where trucks can back up and deliver mail, that kind of thing, that we can't really just set up in any, you know, someplace that a donut shop or a bookstore might be able to.
Doherty says the new facility will be located in Montpelier's city center complex. The operator of the dam at Morrisville's Green River Reservoir says it's filed paperwork to forfeit its license to produce electricity with the dam. Morrisville Water and Light owns and operates the dam that creates Green River Reservoir, a hugely popular state park. The dam was built in 1947, and the nonprofit utility has operated it for electricity for several decades. The utility claims it can't afford to operate the dam anymore. It's asked the state of Vermont to take over the structure's ownership. The utility has asked the federal government for permission to stop operating the dam for power, but keep it standing for flood control and recreation. The Agency of Natural Resources says right now there is no plan or budget for the state to take over the dam. ANR is waiting on the results of a dam safety study due to be completed this fall. That will estimate the cost and liability of taking on ownership. State lawmakers continue to work on reforming Vermont's signature land use law, Act 250. One bill that passed the House last week would divide the state into a series of tiers. Those tiers would then dictate if and how the community can develop land. The top tier would be exempt from what's often considered an onerous Act 250 review process. Representative Seth Bongartz of Bennington County is one of the bill's co-sponsors. He discussed it yesterday on Vermont Edition.
Tier 1A are going to be your growth centers, the city of Bennington, Brattleboro, obviously Burlington, you know, White River Junction, you know, St. Albans. Towns like that will be your growth centers. Those areas would be exempt from Act 250.
Meanwhile, some lawmakers are concerned that not enough communities will fall into the top tiers and the development process will still be too slow to meet the urgency of the housing crisis. Trails across Vermont are closed for mud season. But some towns are going the extra mile to keep visitors off them during next week's solar eclipse, when emergency services are expected to be strained. Underhill Town Administrator Brad Holden says they're limiting Mountain and Stevensville roads to local traffic only on the day of the eclipse. That's because they both lead to Mount Mansfield State Park.
The trails are closed for mud season during the month of April. Green Mountain Club, you know, doesn't want trails to be destroyed by hikers during the mud season.
The town of Duxbury will be closing Camel's Hump Road for similar reasons. Depending on weather, state officials are predicting a wide range of out-of-state visitors on Eclipse Day, from 60 to 200,000 people. Coming up, Vermont has seen a sharp downtick in the number of teachers here. We'll talk about why and how that's affecting schools after this. Vermont has 10% fewer educators than it did before the pandemic. That's the worst mark in the country, save Alaska, according to the U.S. Department of Education report. The decline is prompting some Vermont principals to hire teachers with fewer qualifications and, in some cases, forcing schools to send kids home for the day. Vermont Public's education reporter Lola Dufour is here now to tell me about how we got here and what's being done about it. Hi, Lola.
Hey, Mary.
Why has Vermont seen such a large drop in the educator workforce?
Well, for one, the number of people completing traditional teacher prep programs in Vermont has cratered over the last 20 years. And people who complete those programs are also increasingly not heading into the classroom. Meanwhile, the Vermont Agency of Education has doubled the number of provisional and emergency licenses that it's issued in recent years. Those are granted when districts can't find a fully licensed candidate.
Well, how is that impacting schools?
Well, there are concerns about putting educators in front of classrooms when they're not prepared. John Castle is the executive director of the Vermont Rural Education Collaborative, and until recently, he was a superintendent in the Northeast Kingdom. He recalled to me feeling conflicted about some of the hiring decisions he's had to make as shortages have become more acute.
When you're trying to fill a position and you don't have viable candidates, sometimes you hire individuals that may not really be ready. And you're taking a shot, right? Because that's who you've got. And so that's the quandary, is where, you know, I want to say thank you to, you know, a whole host of folks that have stepped up and said, you know, I'll do my best to be a teacher. But in some cases, that hasn't worked out.
I also talked to Penny Chamberlain, who is the superintendent in the Orleans Central Supervisory Union, which is in the same region. There are days when some of her schools have to send kids in certain grades home for the day because there's no teacher, administrator, or substitute available. And she's struggling to communicate to her families, who are obviously really upset about this, why this is happening.
And there's sometimes that thought that, well, we don't care, we just leave the kids at home because we don't want to teach them or anything of that nature, when in fact, that actually is the, I think from my principal's standpoint, is the biggest heartbreak for them.
Wow. Is this situation happening a lot in Vermont schools?
Luckily, no. What's happening in Orleans Central is an outlier for now. But it's worth noting that the worst case scenario, which is schools sometimes not being able to open their doors, is already happening. And even if it's extreme, it's also indicative of a larger trend. According to the Agency of Education's data, the schools with some of the highest proportions of teachers on emergency and provisional licenses are basically all in rural elementary schools. So rural elementaries are really struggling to recruit, and because they're small, they're also more likely to experience a major disruption if someone is out sick or quits.
Why is it so hard to recruit and then also retain educators?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. One is pay and benefits. On a per pupil basis, Vermont is one of the top spenders on education in the country. But when it comes to teacher pay, we're actually pretty middle of the pack. Two states that border us, New York and Massachusetts, pay much better. Another factor is housing, which is particularly hard to find in rural areas. Many teachers are also parents themselves, and the scarcity and cost of childcare is also a growing concern, especially for teachers in elementary schools, because they make less than teachers in high school, so they're more likely to decide that working while paying for childcare doesn't make financial sense. And I also heard from several people that the problem is starting to compound itself. Newer teachers need mentorship and support from more experienced educators. But if you have too many newer teachers and not enough experienced teachers to offer them support, then teachers with experience are more likely to burn out, and newer teachers are more likely to feel unsupported and also burn out.
It's this cascading cyclical thing that we're in. And like I said, it's a norm we've developed, but it's not safe, it's not practical, and it's not sustainable.
The Vermont NEA surveyed over 2,000 school employees about their working conditions last year. And according to a summary of results compiled by the union, most educators, except for paraeducators, who are paid the least, cited staffing shortages in their buildings as an even bigger problem than pay. And educators also identified insufficient support for managing student conduct as a major concern.
Wow, this all sounds so bleak. Are there silver linings?
Yes. A lot of people are trying to make it easier to become a teacher. The legislature has funded loan reimbursement programs and waived licensing fees. The Vermont NEA, the teachers' union, has created a program to support educators with temporary licenses attain full licensure through peer-reviewed portfolios. And the Vermont Rural Education Collaborative has started an apprenticeship program. So the people who are working on creating new pathways into the teaching profession think they can put a real dent in this problem. And they're also excited that this could help diversify a workforce and make it more reflective of the overall student population. Here's John Castle again.
In the Northeast Kingdom, if you look at a lot of our schools that have high poverty, not a lot of teachers come from working class backgrounds. They tend to come from middle class or upper middle class backgrounds. And if we can get more people through a non-traditional pathway, right, that can find access and affordability to becoming a teacher, we actually might attract more individuals that have come from, you know, modest economic means. And I think that's important because then they have an affinity for the students that they're working with, and I think students see themselves in those teachers.
That was Vermont Public Education reporter Lola DeFore. Thanks, Lola.
Thanks, Mary.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Bob Kinzel, Abigail Giles, Michaela Lefrak, and Corey Doxer. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mary Angish. Thanks for listening, and talk to you later.